All right, welcome everyone to today's Google SEO Search Central Office Hours Hangout. My name is John Mueller. I'm a search advocate on the search relations team here at Google. And part of what we do are these office hour hangouts where people can join in and ask their questions around their website and web search. Looks like a bunch of you have raised your hands already. And I think, Michael, you were the first one. Somehow your hand disappeared. You want to get started?
Sure. I came in to work on a site that certain sections of the site didn't seem to have the upward momentum with the organic search that I would expect. I diagnosed what I believe is the correct diagnosis for that section of the site, the blog. I think the entire blog page is coded in JavaScript, in a JavaScript app with uncrawlable links. So I've taken your advice from previous office hours to confirm that. And so this week we rolled out a temporary Band-Aid, because it's going to take a long time to kind of recode that entire section. So a temporary Band-Aid we did was put some no script code in there so that if JavaScript is disabled, that they would see links to all the blog posts. We did that as a temporary solution. My question to you is, number one, do you consider that cloaking if it's just links to all the blog posts? And number two, because there's so many of them, there's like 600 links, is that gonna hurt us on that main blog page by having 600 links on there? And so that's just generally you wanna see, I would assume that we would have a positive, experience a positive impact by doing this fix, but I just wanted to confirm with you if you saw any red flags there.
Okay, so I think first of all, we wouldn't consider that cloaking because it's essentially just providing something similar to what you have in the JavaScript side. So I wouldn't worry about that part. In general, we do try to ignore things in a NoScript tag, so that might be something to watch out for to double check if it's actually working as expected.
Okay.
So I kind of watch out for that. And the 600 links by themselves, that shouldn't be problematic. But it does sound like this is more of kind of like a temporary solution to kind of like as a stopgap measure to try to get all of these pages back into the index, something like that. And for like a temporary solution, I don't see any problems with that. I think for the long run, it would be worthwhile to figure out a way to make sure that you have a clear structure within the website that's kind of crawlable. But as kind of a temporary step to at least making those pages findable, sure.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Let me just grab you, Lindsay. I think you were somewhere in the list. I forgot where, but we'll just go with you.
I wasn't next, but someone, yeah, I think I was in there, but.
Whatever, that's fine. Go ahead.
Oh, great, thanks. I hope I'm not cutting anybody else off. My question, I don't know if it's quite applicable for this conversation or not, but I thought I would give it a shot. It's relevant to the top stories carousel and how it's sort of approached and curated in different countries. I work on international SEO, so I spend a lot of time looking at SERPs in multiple regions. And I just noticed a lot of differences by region, some of which are obviously good and relevant because they're targeting, you know, different audiences with different search habits. But in Canada, I've noticed some differences that seem to just have a generally kind of detrimental effect on the quality of results. I posted something about this in the channel, so apologies if this is redundant as well. But wire stories or syndicated content, for example, it's not unusual. It's actually quite common for the same identical story to appear multiple times in top stories side by side. So a user might search for a news topic and see identical content across publishers, which has always sort of struck me as unusual and not something I ever see in US search results. Similarly, there's often more stale content. So the same query run at the same time in, say, Canada, the UK, and the US. The US often has much more fresh results, even for a story that is not US specific in nature, whereas results in Canada or the UK might be, you know, 4-8 hours a day earlier. So obviously in the news space, this is a fairly significant difference. And I was just curious if like you could shed any light on those kinds of differences, especially the ones that seem to kind of lower the quality of SERPs in certain regions, but not in others.
Now, I don't have really a lot of insight into that, but in general, we try to treat these kind of search features as a part of organic search results. And that means we do apply everything around geo-targeting there as well. And I could imagine there might be situations in some countries where we just don't have enough content to kind of make sure that we have the really, I don't know, high quality bar essentially there in the top stories. And I could imagine that you might be seeing something like that. At least it's not the case that we kind of like purposely have different requirements in different countries. So it's that's kind of the direction I would suspect there. I think what would be useful from my point of view would be to have some screenshots and some examples from you. So if you run into this and you're like, oh, this looks terrible, like send some my way, and I can pass those on to the team that works on these features to kind of give them feedback. Usually these kind of changes aren't things that they'd be able to do from one day to the next, but sometimes having some examples of where things are really bad makes it easier for them to say, oh, we need to prioritize working on international search quality or whatever it is.
I've been tracking for about a year and have more examples than you would ever want. So I'll happily send that your way. Is there a preferred address or place to send?
Let me just drop my email address here in the chat.
Thank you so much.
Sure. All right, Akash.
Hi, John. Hi.
Hi.
So actually, I was working for a client for internationalization. And what I found is for few countries, it could be like say France or UK, with the proper Ahreflang tags, we are able to rank up pages, like whatever the scenario was. But for few countries, we are unable to get our the country specific URLs over there. So we have added like proper Ahreflang tags, sitemaps, we have separated them. We make sure that the homepage and the internal part of those particular sections are being linked properly, but since like few countries have been able to get their proper URLs, but for some few countries we are not able to achieve that. Like I've been working for more than 2 to 3 weeks. What could be the possible issues and how to figure it out? But like they're not able to find all those things.
Okay, so I think there are a few things to think about. On the one hand, Ahreflang doesn't change rankings. So it's not something that would make your site appear in search for specific countries. What it does is, given the rankings that your site has, it tries to find the appropriate URL from your website to show there. So for example, if we think one of your pages should be ranked number 5, and a user is searching in the UK, and you have one page that is marked up with Ahreflang for the UK for that, then we'll try to show that page. So it's not that it will change the rankings. It'll just try to find the best page based on the set of pages that you have marked up with Ahreflang. So that's kind of the first thing. For ranking internationally, geo-targeting would be the correct approach. So that's something you can do either with country code top-level domains or with a generic top-level domain, and then either subdomains or subdirectories. And you can specify geo-targeting in Search Console. Geotargeting changes ranking slightly when we think that the user is looking for something local. So it wouldn't change it if we think the user is looking for something completely global. But if we suspect they would like to have local results, we'll try to use geotargeting to improve that. That's the other thing. And I think the final thing also worth saying is specifically because Ahreflang doesn't change rankings, you need to kind of make sure that your website's different country-specific versions are properly known. That means they're properly linked within your website. That means that you properly work to promote them as well externally, so that we know that these individual pages should be shown in the search results in individual countries. So those are kind of the aspects there. So hreflang is a good approach, but it doesn't change rankings. Geotargeting would change rankings when someone is looking for something local. And with international sites, you always need to make sure that your pages are also kind of supported so that we can show them in search.
OK, one more thing, John. How about to tell a user that this is the proper URL for your country rather than going to the more specific of like canonical version? Because I see in some other countries, we have a canonical URLs, like the one which is same for all these pages has been getting ranked rather than what like the US would have the US version. So for some countries, it's been properly visible. So does it like take time, 2-3 or maybe like 3 to 4 months to properly analyze your website and then find the correct URL for your audience?
Usually it does take time, yes. But I'm not 100% sure if you're doing it right with the rel canonical. In particular, if you have different country versions, you should not pick one country as a canonical. So that's one thing to watch out for. These pages should be separate, and they should be able to rank separately. The other thing that you mentioned, kind of like to tell the user which is the right version, I would recommend using a JavaScript banner to tell the user, hey, we have a version that we think is a local version for you, and you can click on it here. If you use a redirect, that always makes it a little bit tricky because we can't crawl through that properly because we always crawl from one location.
Sure. That was a cool advice. Thank you so much, John. Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. Sure. You too. Praveen.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. So my first question is related to a product that we have. And this product is something that is available in two different countries with different names. So for example, it's available in US as product US, and in India, it's like product India. So both these products have like similar features, specifications, not exactly same, but similar. Now, what we were looking for is if someone in India is searching for product US, ideally they should see product India in search results. We'll provide them an option to go to product US if they want to, but in search results, they should see product India. So do you think hreflang tag is a good solution to that problem, or do we need something else?
I think hreflang is the right solution for that. Because like I mentioned before, it doesn't change rankings, but it swaps out the URL. So in a case like that, even if you have different product names, if someone searches for one of those product names, then we will still use hreflang to try to swap out the local version. So that would help someone searching for the US name, if they're located in India, to get the page from the Indian site instead. But I would also work with a JavaScript banner in a case like that, just to make sure that you're catching all of those variations.
Yeah, sure. And that's just one more question. It's related to the Search Console. So just wanted to understand that the queries that we see in Google Search Console are the exact query that the user is using while searching, or is it like something where Google clubbing different queries with same intent into something, one query, and that's how it shows?
So we don't try to mix different intents together, but I think there's some
difference between it. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Google.
We don't try to mix different intents together, but we do try to simplify some things in Search Console. And I think what happens is everything is lowercase, and we probably remove some punctuation. I don't know like the exact details with the punctuation, but it's something where we don't interpret the query and try to make a simpler version of the query, but we do very, very light kind of canonicalization of those queries.
Sure. Thank you.
Janet.
Hi, John. So I think my question is hopefully more simple than everyone else's. But I work at a startup, and we just launched our website. And unfortunately, when you search up our name on Google, our company name, which is Hume AI, so H-U-M-E space AI, the meta description for the homepage has really odd punctuation and formatting. And so we use like a like a content management system called Contentful to update the meta descriptions. And we've tried to do that. We've tried to force Google to re-index and recrawl the site, but that meta description never gets changed. And so kind of like a sad and stressful thing on our part, because we've worked so hard on the site, but you know, it kind of looks janky when you search it on Google. So I'm not sure if you sort of can help me troubleshoot that, or if you know anybody I can contact. I kind of dropped in on the office hours because I couldn't find any other help out there.
Yeah. So I would definitely drop by the Search Central Help Forum, because folks there can probably help out. But I think there are a couple things. On the one hand, we do sometimes update the description based on what people search. So that's something where it's not always guaranteed that we'll use your meta description, even if you have a clean one. We try to match the description to what people search for. So if
it has an oddly interspersed periods after every single word, though. So I can't imagine that people are looking for that.
OK. That sounds weird. Okay.
Yeah. Like, if you just look up like Hume space AI on Google right now, literally, like, it just, it's quite odd. So maybe we can take this conversation offline. Yeah. But I also tried the search forum, and unfortunately there wasn't anything like this online, and nobody was able to help. So yeah. This is like my last resort.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes a description takes a while to update. So that's another thing. With regards to, I don't know, weird characters in the description, I suspect that's something that would go away when we start processing the meta description for your pages. And yeah. Maybe that's just a matter of time.
It's been like 2 months, I think. So
that's pretty long. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing to watch out for, especially with titles and descriptions, is you should ideally make sure that they're unique per page and that they don't come across as being too spammy. So not like a collection of keywords, but rather like clear sentences where you're saying, our company is this and this and this.
But it is, yeah.
OK. Can you drop the link to your site maybe in the chat here? And I can take a look afterwards just to double check if there's anything happening on our side. But
do you think I can email you as well?
Sure. I can't guarantee that I'll be able to respond by email, but I always pass these on to the team to double check.
Oh, that's fine. Or just if you know of anybody who can respond or would be the point person for me to contact, that would be fantastic.
Cool. Let's see. Miguel.
Hello, John.
Hi.
My question is related to soft 404 errors. So our site is having a number, an increased number of errors in what looks valid pages. And we are having these errors for several months. And before, we managed to solve for a lot of pages updating the text. So a text that was there for several times. We updated from, because it contained something like no results found. But now we are having again this type of errors, and yeah, actually we are struggling on how to fix it. So I would like to ask if there is any specific text that might trigger this soft 404 errors or any other issue. Yeah, and also we see that on the Google index is saying that the page is soft 404, but when doing the live test, is okay, and when visiting the page with the browser is also okay. So yeah, if you can give us some hints.
I would have to take a look at some of the pages. So if you have a thread in the help forum with maybe some links from your site where you're seeing this, I'd love to be able to pass that on. So if you could maybe drop a link to the forum thread or to some sample URLs here in the chat, then I can pass that on to the team.
Okay.
So I think the text that you had in there before, where it's something like no results found, I could imagine that our systems see that and say, oh, it's an empty search results page.
Mm-hmm.
And that's less a matter of, it's like, how do I change that text to make it so that it doesn't look like an empty search results page, but rather it should be not an empty search results page. because empty search results pages are always tricky for us, because we don't really know if there's anything worth indexing there. So one of the cases where I have seen this kind of cause problems is if the page by default has this like no results found, and then JavaScript swaps it out, then that's kind of a similar situation where if your page has a no index meta tag and then JavaScript removes that no index meta tag. And that is kind of confusing for us. Mm-hmm. So if these are essentially normal pages and they just happen to have some text on it as well, that seems like something that we should be able to improve on our side. So I kind of love to have those examples.
And also, can it be related with different languages? Because what we are seeing now is that the errors are mainly on pages that are in Arab. So can it be that you are struggling more with specific languages with this type of?
Maybe. I don't know. We use different factors to try to figure out when a page is a soft 404. And we do look at the text on the page as well. And it might be that some of our classifiers are picking up text in different languages incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. And apart from the text, is there anything that you would suggest us to check?
I would just make sure that you have significant content on these pages, so mm-hmm. that it's not like a really short page that looks like an error page. I would make sure that you're using a clear URL structure so that it's clear to us that these pages are a part of your normal website, and not that these pages look like, let's say, search results pages where you have like a parameter for searching and then some keywords, something like that. So those are kind of the tips there. But in general, if these are normal content pages on your website, then I feel our system should be able to pick that up properly. And mm-hmm. if they don't pick it up properly, then we should fix that. It shouldn't be up to you to kind of like change your pages so that Google thinks they're OK now.
Yeah. I just shared an example of page. And yeah, as you can see, it's a normal page with content. And so
OK.
OK. Perfect. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Sure.
We've faced similar issues,
Jessica,
in English.
Okay.
But that's actually not what I'm here for. I just wanted to piggyback to be like, yeah, we had to think about how can we make this look like a profile and less like a results not found page. Should I drop? Anyway, I'm coming today because we've been flying a little bit blind with our search results console because we have like a very large number of crawled but not indexed pages listed under excluded. But then when we click into them, most of these seem to have converted into indexed pages. So we're like really unable to accurately track how improvements to our site are like impacting which pages are being indexed. And I was curious, I guess, about the timeline in that. We're concerned it's impacting our crawling budget.
Okay, I doubt it would be affecting your crawling budget. So
okay.
that's kind of like as a side note.
Got it. That's good.
It's something where I've recently seen some threads like this on Twitter as well, where people saw URLs that were flagged as not being indexed in Search Console, and then when you check them individually, they are actually indexed. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly what is happening there yet. But if you have some examples, if you can send them to me, that would be fantastic.
Okay.
Just so that I can take a look. My suspicion is it's more a matter of timing, in that we show them in the Search Console report, and then they get indexed over time. And mm-hmm. Then at some point, they will drop out of the report again. And for whatever reason, kind of that dropping out is taking a little bit longer than it should. That's kind of my guess there. One way to kind of verify that is to see if these pages actually show up for normal searches. So
yeah.
Take some words from the page, search for that. And if they do show up, then I think there's nothing you really need to do. It's just a report that is kind of lagging behind.
I think we're just trying to really keep an eye out for like actual problems that are preventing indexing as they come. So it's, I think, a little bit difficult with those. But then my other question about being concerned about it impacting crawling, we did submit a Googlebot report asking about like our numbers being consistently low despite improvements. Do you know what the timeline would be for hearing back from that team roughly?
They generally don't respond. So it's generally something where if they find issues with regards to crawling, they just fix it and then kind of set things up normally. So that's something where for the most part, you wouldn't get a response from that team. It's more like you're reporting it and then they take a look and see, oh, it's an issue or not an issue. And then they deal with that.
I see. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Do you have any other advice for, I think, getting insight into like the current crawling budget, other just because I feel like we've really been trying to make improvements but haven't seen a jump in like pages per day crawled?
How big is your site?
Our site is in the hundreds of thousands of pages.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen like maybe around 2,000 pages per day being crawled, even though there's like a backlog of like 60,000 discovered, but not yet indexed or crawled pages.
Yeah. So in practice, I see two main reasons why that happens. On the one hand, if the server is significantly slow, which is kind of the response time, I think you see that in the crawl stats report as well. That's one area where if like I had to give you a number, I'd say aim for something below like, I don't know, 300, 400 milliseconds, something like that on average, because that allows us to crawl pretty much as we need. It's not the same as the page speed kind of thing. So that's kind of one thing to watch out for. The other big reason why we don't crawl a lot from websites is because we're not convinced about the quality overall.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something where, especially with newer sites, I see us sometimes struggle with that. And I also see sometimes people saying, well, it's technically possible to create a website with a million pages because we have a database and we just put it online. And just by doing that, essentially from one day to the next, we'll find a lot of these pages, but we'll be like, we're not sure about the quality of these pages yet. And we'll be a bit more cautious about crawling and indexing them until we're sure that the quality is actually good.
So, yeah, because we were, I think, in that camp of like too many lower quality pages, and we've adapted over time for like, here are the pages that should be listed and should be crawled. But I feel like we're probably still in the lower quality camp and we don't know how to move up. But I guess it takes time.
Yeah, I mean, improving the quality of a website overall, I think that's something that is less of a technical issue for the most part and more almost like a strategic issue. Like, how do you approach what you publish? One approach that is a little bit more technical is to think about what you can do to reduce the number of pages that you provide so that you have kind of, like instead of saying you have 100,000 pages, you say, well, I have 20,000 pages that I want Google to crawl and index, and these are our 20,000 best pages. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, it's a lot easier for us, on the one hand, to say, well, we can crawl and index 20,000 pages, that's fine. And we can look at these pages and we can see, oh, these are actually performing really well. These are really good pages. And then from there, over time, we can kind of expand to the rest of the site.
Okay.
So that's something I sometimes see sites do. And I think, in general, that's a good strategy because it also helps you to refine a little bit and think about what actually makes a good high-quality page and how could we determine that maybe automatically at scale.
Really quickly, so if you started off in that like 100,000 camp and are migrating to the like 20,000 more limited, higher quality pages, how long would you say it takes for Google to like recalculate that reputation of pages in sitemap being reliably pages worth crawling?
I would assume that takes a couple of months, maybe half a year, something along those lines. because we really need to kind of take the time to understand the essential new site that we find like that.
I see.
And some things we'll pick up fairly quickly, but when we're talking about the overall quality of a website, that does take a bit of time.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. All right. Let me just take you, Mark, and then I'll switch to some of the submitted questions so that we don't lose track of those either.
Sure. Thanks, John. I was wondering if Google has any updated guidance on what I'll call white label providers, or those that take advantage of leasing subdomains or subfolders from high authority sites who aren't actually creating the content themselves. Specifically, after the latest core updates, we see many of, I'll say, like new sites doing this, and they're jumping up in rankings pretty quickly, taking maybe 5 or 6 of top 10 search results for some high volume terms in our industry. I think Google addressed this in 2019 and said those integrations would be treated appropriately, but I'm not sure I know what that means.
Yeah, it would be treated appropriately. That magic word. I don't think we have any updated guidance on that. Essentially, we still feel the same way. The idea is essentially on our side to say, well, these are not a part of the main news website, but maybe we can show and rank them kind of independently as well. Okay. And that's something of an approach that I think is reasonably fair. But I could imagine that over time, there are some things that we need to reconsider. So if you're seeing aspects where you're saying, well, this is actually pretty bad, or these results look really terrible, feel free to flag that to us. And I don't know, flag it on Twitter, send it to us directly, or whatever. So that we can pass it on to the team and say, look, it's like we worked on this a couple of years ago, but maybe it's time to work on it again a bit.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to understand if that's like an acceptable model so that we understand if that's something we'll see long term. So I'll definitely flag it in Twitter. And one other thing real quick, after the latest core updates, we see people also ask coming up higher in terms. So wondering if like there's a, if that changes with core updates or how Google determines it, if it's like per search or if it's kind of per industry where they appear in the results?
I don't think it's per industry, but usually what happens with these kind of elements in the search results is that we try to figure out what is the most appropriate thing to show. And with a core update, that does change some things kind of in our core algorithms, and it can result in kind of a mix or a different mix of elements that we show in the search results. So. Sometimes that's what the people also ask. Sometimes that's with regards to featured snippets or rich results. These things essentially are all kind of tied in with the core algorithms that we have. So it would be normal to see some fluctuations there.
Got it. OK, that's helpful. Thank you, John.
Sure. OK, let me run through some of the submitted questions so that we have some of that covered. I think some of these overlap with what we talked about already. How can a website related to other niches like ringtones handle high-quality content? When I search for high-quality content, everyone talks about writing high-quality articles, but few niches, like I mentioned, are completely different. So what can I do? I think sometimes it's really hard, and especially if you're starting out with a website and you're starting out with an area where there is a lot of really strong competition, and what essentially you're providing is a commodity product and that everyone has exactly the same thing, then it's really hard to go in there and say, I will provide something of higher quality. Usually, my recommendation there is to look at this more as a business problem than an SEO problem. And if you want to start a business in a very competitive area with a commodity product, essentially, then you're going to have a really bad time. Or you're going to have, I don't know, a long, long time available to kind of work and improve things over time. So that's something where if you're starting out with a website, I would try to find an area where you can be kind of the leader or where you have kind of unique knowledge, experience, or unique product that you can provide, and then work on it from there. Whereas if you go to an existing niche and just try to provide high quality information about these commodity products, I don't think that's really going to kind of like make a dent in the market. Then a question about internal linking. Do you think it's recommended to add a nofollow tag to internal links that lead to?
This is my question, John.
Oh, okay. Wow. You're next too. Perfect. Yeah, especially on large websites with a lot of noindex pages and a lot of internal links to those pages. Do you think this can save crawling budget and link juice? I don't know. I'm torn about this. I think to some extent, like if you're linking to things like category pages or different filtered pages on an e-commerce site, different sorting parameters, those kind of things, I could imagine that using nofollow helps us to focus on the primary content. But if you're talking about things like a privacy policy page, you just don't want to link to that. I don't see how using nofollow on those links will change anything.
So we have a lot of we have a lot of pages that have no index tag because it doesn't make sense for them to compete on SERP, but they have value for our users.
Yeah.
So because of that, we have a lot of internal links that lead to those pages that have value for the users, but we won't want the crawler to go to them and waste our call budget. So Matt, like years ago, recommended not to use nofollow tags on internal links. So I was wondering what you think about it. Should we use internal nofollow tags on internal links or not? Because on every page, we have internal links to noindex pages. So this is the question in general.
Yeah. I don't think it's something that has like a clear binary answer where you should never do it. I could imagine in some situations it makes sense. Like I mentioned, if you have categories or filters and sorting parameters, things like that, I could imagine it helps us a little bit. But in general, even without the noindex there, without the nofollow there, if we see that this page has a noindex, then we probably won't crawl it as frequently anyway.
Yeah, but is it finishing our budget? So the crawler, when he's going to that page and he's seeing a noindex tag, that is, it's counting on our crawl budget. I think it does, no?
It does count in your crawl budget, but I think it's something that our systems tend to learn, though. So that's kind of the I think the tricky aspect here, in that when it comes to crawling websites, we try to understand which pages need to be crawled how often. And if we see that a page is a no index, then we'll say, well, we don't have to look at this that often because it's essentially a soft 404 or something like that.
No, it's a good page with a lot of content, but we don't want it to compete on SERP. And we see that the crawler is going to those pages a lot because there's a lot of internal links to those pages.
Yeah.
So that's this is the dilemma to what you do to.
I don't think it's terrible to put in a nofollow on these pages, and it might have a positive effect in that regard. So that's something I would, in your case, at least try out. And you can test it out and see what happens. It's not the case that if you put nofollow on internal links, then something will explode. It's just like for normal pages, you wouldn't need to do that. But in a case like yours, I could imagine maybe it makes sense. The other approach that you might take is to make sure that these pages are in a separate URL section, something like a separate folder or a separate subdomain or something like that, so that we can easier recognize that we don't need to crawl them as often. If that's possible, then I suspect our systems would learn that over time as well. But I also don't see any problems with saying, well, you'll try the nofollow and see if that changes anything for crawling. You can take a part of your website and test it like that. And from my point of view, it's more a technical thing. So it's not that we would think your site is lower quality or anything like that. It's something where you can purely measure, like, does this have an effect on the crawling of the pages that are linked or not? And if so, are you sure that you can implement it in a way that you don't accidentally nofollow links that you do care about?
OK, thank you very much. So you do recommend to try it, at least.
I I would definitely try it. I mean, it's one of those technical things that essentially you can measure and you can see how it works. It's not going to blow up. It's not that Google systems
are
going to say like, oh, there are no followed internal links. This is a bad site.
Yeah, but on every page there's going to be a lot of nofollow links. So
that's fine.
Maybe it's a bad signal.
No, that's perfectly fine.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. A question on schema markup for aggregate rating. If we have multiple services but we collect the reviews in one generic place, like Trustpilot, how should we mark up the separate product pages? As I understand, the advice is not to mark up each page. So at the moment, I only have one marked up. We have about 1,200 reviews, and our rating is approximately 4.7. So we're keen to shout about this. So unfortunately, from our guidelines around rich results, you would probably not be able to mark these up at all, because our guidelines essentially say like you should only mark up the pages where you actually collect the reviews yourself. So if some third party is collecting the reviews and you just kind of like take that aggregate rating and copy it onto your website, we would not consider that to be valid aggregate review markup. And it might be that we don't show it. It might even be that the web spam team says, oh, this is so problematic that we will suppress the reviews completely for this website. So that's kind of the, I think, the bigger issue that you need to think about. Essentially, from our point of view, these third-party pages where you're collecting the reviews, those are the ones that would be able to mark up the reviews, but not your website. Because you can kind of see it as essentially curating the reviews, because you're taking a number from one website and you're manually copying it into another, or maybe you're using an API. But essentially, we have to trust you that you're taking the sum of the reviews and not like a sample that you like. So that's kind of the reasoning behind that. Is there any benefit to using schema markup outside of the featured snippet possibilities, for example, using collection page markup on category pages to make a clear distinction of the entity? There is a minimal positive effect of using kind of the non-rich result structured data on your pages in that we understand the entities a little bit better on those pages. But the effect is not something that you would probably see in most cases, and it wouldn't be visible because like it's not a part of the rich results type, so we wouldn't be able to show that. So that's something where if you're focusing on kind of like return on investment for implementing different structured data features, I would focus on things that are immediately visible in the search results, because that's something where you know that there is an effect. And the effect might not be a ranking effect, but at least you see a visible effect of the work that you did. Whereas if you add structured data to your pages and you have no idea if Google or anyone does anything with it, then that feels a little bit futile and kind of like, well, you're trusting that some magic will happen along the way. And in particular, something like collection page markup, where you're saying, oh, this is a collection of different things, I don't see our systems would being able to use that in any positive way. So it would be slightly different if you're marking up things like individual locations or individual entities and names and companies, things like that. That, I imagine, might be useful to us because we can look at the text, and the text might be ambiguous, but your structured data tells us, oh, this is a location and not a Spanish word or whatever. But let me just turn off the phone. Always good surprise along the way. But if you're just adding something generic like connection page or the web page markup, then that seems like something that wouldn't really be useful for us. I got an algorithm penalty from Google between the 31st of March and the 1st of April. I didn't get any manual action email from Google. After a few days, pages got indexed. What can I do to recover? So if there's no manual action or no message in Search Console, then essentially that's our algorithms that are saying, well, we don't really know how to place your website, and it might be that we don't show it as visibly as before. And usually that's that's more of a quality issue than anything else. So that's something where I would try to take a step back and think about the overall quality of your website and see what you can do there to improve things. And also, if it's really the case that we actually start de-indexing pages from your website or a significant amount of pages from your website, then that feels like something where there's a significant quality issue that you need to work on. And quality issues like that are not things that you need to flag to us that you've completed that, but rather over time, we will kind of reevaluate your site. And if things are OK, then we will start showing it differently again. Is there a need for a schema to be used on the main category pages, subcategory pages for blog content hubs? I was thinking that breadcrumb structured data would be good, but is there anything else that can help Google to gain context into what the topic is about? I think breadcrumb structured data is always useful, in particular because less and less it feels like we're showing URLs in the search results. And instead, we try to show these kind of breadcrumb links. And if we have to figure out the breadcrumb links ourselves, then that's sometimes hit and miss. If you can specify those yourself with structured data, that's usually a lot better. So I would definitely aim for that. Other things on these pages, it's hard to say offhand, but usually you would focus on the individual blog posts instead and not on kind of like the category pages on a blog. What do you recommend to young websites that can't outrank old websites because they have many links? I don't know. This is almost like one of those business questions again. It's like you're starting off with a new business. What can you do to compete against kind of these old businesses? The interesting thing is we get exactly the same question the other way around from existing and older websites as well. Usually they tend not to come to these office hours, but they'll go to their account manager and complain. It's like, oh, some new site is ranking ahead of us. Essentially, from our point of view, we don't have any preference with regards to new websites or old websites, but rather we try to evaluate what makes the most sense to show to people. And it's not just based on links. So just kind of like blindly saying, well, old websites have more links, therefore they're shown, I think that's like super oversimplifying and in most cases probably incorrect. And it also kind of doesn't align with when the old websites complain about new websites ranking instead of them. But it is something where, kind of like I mentioned before, if you're going into a market where there is a lot of really strong competition, then you really, I don't know, you should expect some headwind. And it's going to be hard. And usually, it's a lot easier to start off with something where you're kind of like ahead of everyone else, where you're providing some content that's really fantastic that doesn't compete with existing content, where you're doing something different from everyone else, rather than just saying, well, I'm writing about the news in a little bit of a better way. Essentially, if you're providing something different, then it's a whole different game then, because then the old websites might not have anything that competes with that. So that's usually the direction that I would go there. All right, maybe I'll go to some more live questions, and then we'll pause the recording so that it doesn't get too long. Let's see, Jason.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Hi.
Hey, so our question is, we're ranking in some competitive niches, and we've been exploring different link building strategies. One of the ones that have given us the most interest is actually Google property stacking, and I just wanted to know if it's still acceptable to do with the new core update.
How do you mean?
So during our research, we found out that people were using Google properties, like say, for example, Google Slides, Google Sheets, Google Docs, and creating them within a Google site and then linking that Google site into their website to try to boost authority. Is that an acceptable strategy, or what do you think about that?
I don't think that would work at all, because I don't know, kind of the way that all of these user-generated content sites are handled, I don't think that would change anything. So kind of going with the mindset that, oh, it's hosted on a google.com domain, therefore it'll be valuable for my website, I don't think that that really works. So I don't know, that sounds very questionable. I think creating Google Docs and hosting them on your website, like, why not? But I wouldn't expect anything magical to happen out of that. I think in general, with regards to link building, I would recommend being super cautious and really thinking about like what Google is trying to do with regards to links, because we want to see essentially natural links in that you're providing something fantastic and people are saying, oh, look at this fantastic thing. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that we're looking for. Whereas if we look at it and see, oh, it's like you're placing all of these links and like saying, I'm really fantastic, come look at me, that's not really that useful for our systems. And if we see that's being overdone, then we might go off and say, we don't trust any of the links going to this website. Because it's like we can't differentiate between the links that you're creating and the links that are actually normal.
Right. Well, we found this issue when we were looking through doing some backlinking research, and we found that in the city of Austin, there was this Google site that was just having iframes all over, like Google Calendar, Google Docs, and it was ranking number one. And it's been ranking number one for well over 6 months. And we're just like, man, this looks terrible, but how is it number one? What's going on there? So we needed to come with some sort of solution for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely not because of like all of those embeds. That would be crazy. I don't think anything like that would happen. I mean, like in the early days, there was also talk that links from Gmail, for example, would help your website to rank well. And it just doesn't make any sense. So that's something where I suspect someone is just trying everything out. And one thing might be working, one thing might be OK, and all of the rest is essentially ignored. And then when you look at it, you say, like, oh, they're doing all of these things. Maybe all of these things are working. And actually, it's something completely unrelated. And we often see that also with small business sites in that they'll do a lot of things wrong. And our systems are essentially tuned to ignoring a lot of these wrong things because we know people just follow bad advice. And if they're also doing like a handful of things right, then sometimes they're just ranking because of those things that they're doing right, and not because of all the things that we're ignoring.
That makes sense. All right, thank you so much, John. I appreciate it.
Sure. All right, Barry.
Good morning, John.
Hi.
I've got a another soft 404 issue. I've got a site I'm working on. They have about 40,000 products. I've posted this in the Google Search Console support, and they don't see an issue with the page, sample page. And in Google Search Console, if it's like each time there's a crawl, there are more pages added to the soft 404 list. And if I take a product that's showing is fine and then revalidate it, it will then give a soft 404 error. The only thing I'm seeing that might be triggering it is there's some mystery JavaScript code on the page with a line that says inventory false. Would Google be looking at that and thinking that that might say the product's out of inventory and don't index it?
That would be kind of strange, but I don't know. Our systems sometimes do strange things. So in your case, I would see if you can change that line and just test it out. But I would also love to have those examples. So if you can maybe copy a link to the forum thread here in the chat, then I can pass those examples on to the team to make sure that we pick up that properly. I mean, it's something where I would say like we shouldn't be recognizing a random line in JavaScript as being a reason for a soft 404. And maybe you can fix it, but we still shouldn't be recognizing that.
OK. Thanks. I'll post that and the bit of code.
All right. Perfect. Thank Michael. You.
Hi, just a very, very quick follow-up on my first question about putting all those NoScript links. The result of that is the HTML file went from like 89 kilobytes to about 200 kilobytes. Our developer has a concern that the text to code ratio might be cause a problem. Given the weight between having crawlable links versus a high text to code ratio, what's your opinion on the risk of that?
So we don't do anything text to code ratio wise. So from that point of view, I wouldn't care. The only thing I would watch out for is the general speed of the page itself, okay, which you can test with all of the Core Web Vitals tools. And my assumption is that this kind of content would compress fairly well. So it wouldn't be that it slows down the largest contentful paint or anything like that. So probably that would be fine from that regard. But definitely, okay, like text to code ratio doesn't matter.
OK, we will measure and monitor. Thank you.
OK, cool. OK, let me take a break here and pause the recording. And I'll be around a little bit longer. I have to leave in like a half an hour. But until then, we can hang around. I can finish the people who have raised hands as well. If you're watching this on YouTube, thanks for watching. And hopefully, you can join in one of the future ones. Also, for all of you here, as well as those watching, we have a survey running on YouTube at the moment. And I would love to have your input there. So essentially, we're trying to figure out what we should tweak on our YouTube channel and our YouTube strategy. And if there are any things on your mind that we should do differently or that we're doing well, like let us know about that. All right. So thank you for watching. And maybe see you all next time. And pause the recording.